Greetings and welcome to Lecture 8 in this American History Program for the junior and senior high class of history at our house. The title of today's lecture is America as World Police Power. So we are trying to fill in our picture of this context of the world that we live in. The world that we want to better understand in order to live better in it. And so we need to look at this world like a set of detectives to see what its features are and how they are going to affect us. And then we will use history to gain further insight into how things came to be the way that they are and the way that they are going to unfold around us. So that as people who are living in this world and acting in this world, we'll be equipped to live in it. So for starters, let me share my desktop. I want to come to this formulation, this summary formulation of world history up to this point, or American, what we've learned so far, kind of about our context. But it just occurred to me before I do that, and before I answer your question, Bria, that I want to take us for a second to the history at our house, you know, one of, like yesterday's lecture, for instance, which is posted on YouTube. And I want to take you through one technicality that's important if you're going to be viewing the lectures. And that is that all of the History at Our House screencasts are in HD. And in order to view them in HD, though, sometimes you need to make sure that YouTube is sending them to you HD quality. So the way that you do that, in case you have not figured this out previously, I know it took me a little bit to figure it out, is you got to go down here to this gear wheel down here, and you've got to force it to go to HD, because it will often default to something lower, like 480p. So you've got to force it up into 720p, and then that way, when you view it, especially on your HD TV, if you happen to view your YouTube there, or on your computer, whichever, it's going to come out as clear as it can be. For the recordings, right? So just I wanted everybody to know that before we proceeded into the content. All right, so now we come back to this. And so I think Bria already wanted to mention something or ask a question. Go ahead, Bria.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it yesterday, and I was thinking about the word interconnected. I'm thinking about how we were doing the export and importing last class.
Yeah, right.
And what the two words meant.
Yeah.
And the it was import and out and export, and X kind of means out and import kind of means in.
Right.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely right. So those are, it's always good to think about those prefixes and how the concepts that we use are constructed with these different elements. So I completely agree with you that the import and export are two really interesting concepts. And then you get, and you combine those and you think about the so-called balance of trade, and you start to think about the complexity of the relationships between countries, especially even just our trading relationships between countries are always very complex. So we're going to be talking a little bit more about that today, about America's role in this interconnected world and some of the trading relationships that it has, but also in connection to the cultural relationships that it has with other nations, with other people. So, yeah, let us, I would like somebody to read this for me here rather than me. So, can I please have a volunteer reader to read this segment for us? So, Alexander, please, go ahead.
We live in an interconnected, globalized, America-centric world, 5,000 years into the story of recorded human history in which the United States is the world's police power.
Okay, thank you, sir. Well enunciated. So, this is a good summary statement of what we've been looking at so far. And we are going to focus today on this last element. Okay? And that's going to take us in a new direction, unfortunately. Not all of it good, as Keane was foreshadowing the other day. So we've seen many positives. We've seen that we live in an age of international travel. We've seen that we live in an age of multinational families. We live in an age of globalized trade. And here we are in this class speaking on a global communication network that puts us instantly in touch with one another, no matter how far away we may be. So these are amazing things. This is part of the wonder of modern life. But not all the outcomes of globalization and interconnection and America-centrism are positive. Globalization, in particular, notably, was accompanied by a lot of violence and a lot of negative forms of behavior by human beings toward one another. And right from the start. And this was nothing new. Human beings have always, as people of different cultures, of different places, have always had difficulty interacting with each other. And so when globalization occurred, it wasn't anything new, except the scale of it, the scope of it, became global. And so when Columbus, for instance, arrived in the Americas, as is well known, thought he was going to get to China, and the Spanish were very disappointed that they weren't reaching this supposedly advanced civilization of China. And so instead they found these primitive people, you know, as depicted here in this painting. And remember how we saw the video of the Amazonian tribe and how they were enacting all these strange ritualistic actions as they met these modern people? Well, I think that was a really kind of dramatic scene that reminds me of, or it must have been very similar to that, when explorers encountered really, really primitive people, essentially walking around naked, and it hadn't yet developed any civilization. And so when the Spanish, and Columbus sailed for Spain, even though he was Italian, when the Spanish arrived, they didn't view these people as worthy of respect. They didn't focus on the fundamental similarities between human beings. They looked at them as being inferior. They looked at them as being so different and uncivilized as to be worthy of nothing less than just being enslaved and conquered, and whatever territory happened to be there, whatever resources happened to be there, the Spanish felt completely justified in taking. All right, so now that was repeated many times over throughout the story of globalization. Wherever Europeans went, especially in the Americas and in Africa, which were the most backward places, they found the very same kinds of people, very primitive people, and they did to them what people had been doing to each other ever since Manes Narmer and long before. Right? I mean, Manes Narmer, what is he doing as he gets our recorded history started? He is conquering and enslaving. That's the story of the unification of Egypt, as one ruler bashing in the head of another and conquering his people and forcing them to live for him. And the story of Egypt, here's a great painting of the mass slavery that was involved in Egyptian society. It's well known that how did the pyramids get built? By conscripting tens of thousands of laborers. The Egyptians themselves, and probably conquered peoples from elsewhere. So here they are, you know. Okay, get to work with a whip, right? And this is life. The way that it has been lived, and the way that it was lived, very sadly, throughout the early phases of globalization. So, sadly, these early interactions between cultures in this, as interconnectivity arose, many of them were negative. Many of them were very destructive, very awful, very terrible. And so for a lot of people then, globalization, when they think of globalization, the association that they have is negative, in essence. But that is not true. That is definitely a failure to think in essentials. Because globalization was just the process whereby people became connected. That by itself, in essence, is a positive thing. People living in societies, people living in a connected manner, rather than in an alienated and separate manner, right? That's a positive thing. The connections between people are a good thing in essence. But of course, when people become connected, then all of the facets of human nature and all of the virtues and vices of people, well, become expressed on that level. So people make good connections between them and people make bad ones. So in globalization, that is absolutely the case, and we're going to have to contend with that. And as we get now into our story of America-centric globalization, it's the same thing. Okay, we're going to get into a story with America as the world police power. And, well, that's going to have its good features, and it's going to have its bad ones, depending on how you look at it. So hopefully we can get into an interesting discussion about this multifaceted thing that is America-centrism. Yesterday we already talked about three features of it, but there's so much to say about it. So I'm hoping that partly because of your news research project that you're going to see a few things that perhaps you hadn't seen before or have questions that you maybe were not able to answer through the news or what have you. All right, but basically they're all going to revolve around the three facets of America-centrism. So what is America-centrism? Good review question. And how did it arise? What are the features of it? So if you were to define America-centrism, what does it mean? And start there. All right, Alexander?
It means that America is the main country in the world in terms of richness and power and culture.
Okay, so in fact, you already enumerated the three different categories, but I'm not too happy with the word main. I think, you know, if we were to include the word main there, that's kind of a weak one. So let's get a better one. Somebody help improve Alexander's definition by substituting this word main. Main is not enough. So what could we use instead? Bria?
Maybe the center, like the center of everything?
Well, yeah, but no, because when we talk about centrism, there are contexts in which centrism is physical, in which it's geographical or spatial, but evidently not in this context. So it's not really, it's a more of a metaphorical or figurative use of the term centric, right? So we're not looking so much for that. So what are we gonna use? We need a different word. We need a word like dominant or predominant. What would be another interesting word? Are we gonna need a thesaurus for this here? Maybe we need a thesaurus. So if that's the case, I can go all the way over here and go thesaurus.com. And so let's put in the word main and see what happens. This is always a good thing. The internet is fantastic. Alright, so central, essential, fundamental, leading, major, preeminent. That's a good one. Let's go with that one. Preeminent. Let's go in the dictionary and look at preeminent. Eminent, above or before others, superior, surpassing. Okay, so the United States is the preeminent country in the world. On an economic level, on a military level, and on the level of cultural influence. The United States is the preeminent country in the world. That is perfect. Okay, so eminent means high in station or rank. Preeminent means highest ranking, right? Eminent is high, but preeminent means absolutely on top of everything, right? And that is absolute truth. It's to a very asymmetric degree, right? In other words, it's amazing how far ahead the United States is in all of these categories. So it's not just Maine. So that was the point, is that we've got to get to a word that captures something beyond that. Preeminent would be the right word. Okay, so the United States is the preeminent nation in the world in terms of wealth, power, and cultural influence. Okay, so good thing, bad thing, America-centrism. Which is it? Both, says Bria. Instinctively the right answer, right? So let's look at a few of these dimensions of it as we work our way towards the world police power. Here is a good dramatic visualization of the impact of America-centrism on China. So some of you guys have seen this in the context of Asian history before. The picture at the top is Shanghai before connection to America. The Shanghai at the top of the map was disconnected from the world. The China of that era was alienated from the world, did not have trade links with America. And then it opened up. And what happened? The spectacular growth story of China is one of the most amazing stories in the history of cultures and of economies all around the world. These towers are bigger than the Empire State Building. They are staggering. This city just flew up into the sky out of nothing. And China has just become an incredibly important country in the world. How did it do that? By its connection to America. By becoming America's trading partner. And using that to its advantage. Not everybody can pull it off quite as well as the Chinese. The Chinese, I admire what they achieved enormously. There's something quite interesting and fascinating about Chinese culture, about Chinese people. They have a mercantile quality, which is quite amazing in certain regards. They pulled this off. They did this in relation to America, certainly. Right? So, but was it all good? No, definitely not. China is a very mixed culture, and America is a mixed culture. So the relationship is not all good. But in terms of economic connection to America, China has benefited enormously. I mean, to a staggering degree. So that's good. America's economic relationship to China has been incredibly powerful and good for China. If you look around the world, typically, if you have an economic link to America, it's good for you. Now, all things being equal, right? You would rather have one than not. So America-centrism, in economic terms, has been, to this point, very beneficent, very positive for the world. I don't think that you can make the case that it's anything other than that. Okay, So what about America's military power? Good thing or bad thing? This America-centric military world that we live in. Bria says both. One more than the other, maybe? What do you think? Anybody? Have a slant on that question? Or a perspective, maybe? Keen?
I'd say, I mean, the benefits do outweigh the downsides. Just if you look at things like the world wars, you know, until we got into them, the other countries were struggling to suppress the threats. Look at Germany, Nazi Germany, that's the obvious example. Mm-hmm. You know, things could have gone very badly for the whole world if we hadn't stopped them. That sounds very, you know, selfish, and, you know, it really raises us up in a way that makes some people uncomfortable. But I think it is a good thing. There are lots of downsides, too, which are much harder to define. They're not as straightforward and, you know, clean cut.
True enough. But I will take it further than that. America has saved the world. Nothing less. And nobody should ever be able to say anything else. And it is so, there's nothing that, the only thing that could ever tip the balance in any other direction other than profound positive impact would be if the United States destroyed the world. So that's it. As far as that goes, America's record is unbelievably positive. And when it comes to overall, it is by far, it is the most beneficent military power in the history of mankind. It saved the world, especially in World War II, when the world could have dipped into a dark age of unbelievable horror had the United States not accomplished what it did in literally saving the world. So, you know, this is, I didn't want to go and get some really, really graphic images, but I found this one, which I really, really liked. So this is a picture of an American soldier being raised up onto people's soul, onto their shoulders, right? As the Americans came and liberated them from their prison camp in World War II. This is a celebration of the unbelievably benevolent act of America saving the world from itself in World War II. And anybody that knows anything about the Holocaust and all of those horrors, which are not depicted here because it's just too much. It's too emotional for me. I can't show stuff like that too often. But the truth is America's benevolent role is beyond question. And fantastic. And there were, for the longest time, people were, you know, completely recognized that. Here's a great picture, which I like because if you can read this, this is French. These are American soldiers in France after they saved France for the second time. So not surprisingly, the sign says, "Hooray for America." It's French. It says, "Vive l'Amérique," which basically means, "Hooray for America." Thank you, it should say as a subtitle, "Thank you for saving the world from itself." And so, yeah, definitely the United States has been overall incredibly beneficent in its actions as a world police power. There have been negatives. I will not pretend otherwise. There have been negatives, and some of them make me really sick to my stomach. Yeah, but Timothy, you have to understand, it doesn't say "Live America." There's no literal translation for "Vive l'Amérique" other than "Hooray America." Okay, so, yes, as I said, there have been negatives. Overall, America's military power has been incredibly positive as a feature of the world. And this has to do with this third dimension of America's place in the world, this third dimension of America-centrism, which is cultural influence. So we have not gotten deep enough into this concept. So, yes, we talked about, recently we talked about, well, dimensions of it, which are pretty straightforward, such as movies, television, music, food, fashion. These were all things that we were talking about in relation to culture, which are fairly concrete, fairly easy to grasp. Okay. But what is the essence of America's cultural presence in the world? Real question. What does America stand for? Now, the fact that not everybody's hand went up is just a sad reflection of the fact that America stands for this less and less clearly every day, but it still does. So it should still be an answerable question. Let's put it this way. What did America stand for very, very clearly from the start? Ben?
Freedom.
Freedom. In a word. In a word. That is the essence of what America stands for. Now, yes, it stands for it less and less clearly, as it seems, every day. But it does stand for it. Right? When you enter New York Harbor, the symbol of America is... not the statue of slavery, not the statue of anything else, but liberty. The statue of liberty. And the founding fathers laid it right out in the Declaration of Independence, and they said that every individual has a right to liberty. America has stood for this idea very clearly. At first, continued to stand for it, I would say very clearly, for at least all the way until the end of communism, which we will see is something that America helped bring about. And today, less clearly, very sadly, if you were to go to world rankings of countries in the world and you would say, what are the freest countries in the world? America is no longer in the top 10. So that's kind of sad. It's not just sad. It's tragic. And it is upsetting, and it's very problematic, but it is also a feature of our world. But, all right, it's something that we are going to have to contend with. The transformation is underway. The United States is evolving in a certain direction and has to do, in essence, with its role in the world as world police power. So this is where we have to turn our attention here, to this concept of America as world police power. Yes, okay. Everybody knows to Google the rankings of free countries. So go do that if you want to. Let's stick with this particular theme for the moment. Bria, your hand is up, so I guess I got to give you a chance to say something. Go ahead. Just a sec. Wait, I'm getting the... the bubble of... They call it the... On the Mac, they call it the... you didn't have it up. Okay, fine. So anyway, I'm getting... My computer's feeling a little bit... hard done by for some reason. Anyway, what is it that has been happening more recently, which is very impactful on America's status in the world, and very impactful on American culture and what it stands for and what it projects to everybody else. Well, it has very specifically to do with an event whose anniversary we will mark tomorrow. Tomorrow is September 11th. And everybody here is about the age, or not much more than or younger than the age of the actual event, the event that I'm talking about, which I'm sure you're aware of in some regard, is September 11th, 2001, is when it occurred. And in that event, this clash of cultures that arose in the context of globalization, and a clash of cultures that arose in the context of America-centrism, became very tragically imminent, very tragically close to home. It hit, literally did hit here in America, and became something that now Americans need to weigh and struggle with as they try to continue to be who they are in this world. And it has specifically to do with the city of New York, the very hub of globalization, the financial center of the world, and the greatest city in America, and this is a spectacular place. And, well, what used to be there are these twin towers, which you see beyond the Statue of Liberty there in this photograph. And, well, it's what happened was a very symbolic event, which is worth noting that what was this complex? Literally, what was it called? And what do not enough people spend time thinking about? What was it called? Alexander?
World Trade Center.
World Trade Center. So slow that one down. World, meaning what? What are we talking about? What kind of world do we live in? What is that feature of the world that we live in? Alexander?
America-centric?
Well, no. The world part. What's the world part? Sorry, again. Go ahead, Alexander.
Interconnected?
No. Come on. What is a synonym for world? Wow. I'm stumping you, huh? Putting you on the spot. Timothy.
Planet?
Oh, gosh. All right. Keen, please help us.
I think you're looking for globe.
Globe! Globalization! Right? We're talking about the World Trade Center. We're not talking about the America Trade Center. We're not talking about the New York Trade Center. We're talking about the world. Global. Globalized. World Trade Center. And we're talking about the types of connections, yes, interconnections, economic and so on, right? But having to do with the entire world. This really was the World Trade Center. I mean, these towers were 110 stories high. They were staggering. They were a monolithic reminder of the fact that we live in a globalized trading system in which the United States is preeminent. And what happened to them? They were destroyed. They were destroyed and are gone. Thousands of people lost their lives in the attacks of 9/11. So this is a crucial feature of the world that we live in now. We now live in the aftermath of this world-altering event of 9/11. This is a defining event. This is a defining moment for history. Because America is a country that is preeminent in military power, that no other country can contest with in terms of military power. But what happened on 9/11 did not involve military power. What happened on 9/11 was of a very different character. As some of you know, what happened was terrorists hijacked airplanes, large airplanes full of fuel, and flew them into the skyscrapers to destroy them. That's not military technology. That's something else. That's a different kind of violence called terrorism. And ever since, the chapter in history in which we now live, the defining feature of that chapter of history that we live in is the war on terror. And it is quite possible that it will continue to be the defining feature of the world that you live in for most of your life. Bria, go ahead.
Do we know the nationality of the terrorists?
Yes. And the nationality so much is not the key, as we will see. But I did want to get to this right away, so good enough for bringing up this next issue, which is that they were from... Oh, and I didn't want to have this red at this point. I wanted to leave this green for the... I wanted to leave them green. Let's see if I can do this. Yeah, that would have been better. So where were they from? Well, they were from this region of the world. Let's start with that. Okay, before we get into further details about it. Which by itself is a symptom of globalization. Right? So here we have America over here, and we have New York. And the people who attacked New York and other sites in America on 9/11 were from this region, which we call the Middle East. So the core of the Middle East would be this dark green part. And an extended definition of the Middle East would include all the light green countries as well. All of these countries have something crucially in common, which binds them into very much a fairly unified culture, even though they consist of different countries. There's a common denominator which binds them, which is the religion of Islam. And so what the terrorist attacks of 9/11 involve is a clash of cultures. They involve America's centrism. They involve globalization, and they involve one of those features of globalization, which is cultures colliding with each other. Cultures are complex things. We need to think about and we need to look at this question of what is a culture? One of the dimensions of a culture is religion. World cultures tend to be defined by a handful of attributes, and there's only one culture in the world today which is essentially religious, and that is Islamic civilization. In other words, in the Middle East, in these green countries, the dominant, the preeminent feature of the identity of the culture is the religion. So we're going to have to look at that issue. We're, of course, going to have to ask the question, what about America? How is that different? What about the rest of the world? This, in this globalized world that we live in, why is there one culture that's different than all the others in that particular regard? What about America? America definitely has a connection, has a very strong religious component to its culture and its history. So how do those different facets, features interact with each other is a really difficult question. But basically, and we'll start to tackle it next week, but basically, ever since the attacks of 9/11, there has been a very difficult relationship between cultures. The United States invaded and conquered Afghanistan because their political leadership was partly responsible, and the leaders of the attacks of 9/11 were believed to be there. And following that, the United States attacked and conquered Iraq, a country in the heart of the Middle East as well. And this is very much what happens if you get on America's radar and the United States has the will and the resolve to do it. There's no country in the world that can stand up to the American arsenal. And so if the United States targets you, you're pretty much history. The United States attacked and conquered both of these countries as part of the war on terror and is currently struggling in a variety of ways in this region of the world conducting the war on terror. So many of you had, if not all of you, had, you know, facts in your stories relating to this, right? So if we go back to, maps, world maps and so on, right? So whose was it? This was Timothy. So Timothy went to CNN, and not surprisingly, what did he find? Well, he found that in Iraq, there is now a civil war that has, and also in Syria, neighboring Syria, there are civil wars relating to the attacks that America performed and the change of government that America did in Iraq. These are over here in Somalia, one of the most recent important news events was that the United States killed one of the terrorist leaders in Somalia. So if you look at the main storylines in the world today, there's always going to be one relating to things that are happening here, and there's always going to be one relating to America's role in shaping the world. This is an essential feature of the world that we live in, which we're going to have to contend with. So we're getting very close here to having a pretty complete picture of this world that we live in. Oh, I don't want that one. What did I want? I want this one. Sorry. So we're starting to build in this picture, kind of, I'm going to call it kind of an orientation timeline to the most crucial features of the story. And once we're ready, we're getting pretty close to it, we'll be equipped to now track the story from start to finish. And we'll begin that very soon. So sadly, tomorrow we have to mark 9/11. It will be the 13th anniversary of that. And we will do so. We will also, though, move ahead and live as freely and as happily as we can, as would be appropriate in America. And so we will study history through art. We will continue to learn and try to understand as well as we can what America's place is in the world and try to shape it as members of that society. So that's it for today. Final thoughts. Bria, please.
America became the most powerful military thing. Do we know how that happened?
Yes, we certainly do. And that is exactly the type of question that we need to ask. So that's exactly it, Bria. So I'm setting you up here to have this mindset where you want these questions answered. That's exactly the mindset you need to have when you're studying history. What you need is this anticipatory mindset that says, I'm looking forward to knowing about the world I live in. So here we are in this world where America is this preeminent military power. How did that happen? We're living in this world where America is a preeminent economic power. How did that happen? We're living in this world where America is the preeminent culturally influential country in the world. How did that happen? These are the types of questions that we want to be there, hovering in the back of our minds as we go out into the past. That way, we never lose our connection to the present. We don't go into the past and dive in and lose ourselves there. Instead, what we do is we go there to answer questions about our world. So good, you're already there. The more you're asking yourself these questions, the more you're preparing your mind to have the right orientation to history. That's perfect. Anybody else? Keen, please.
It's more of a technical question. Have you posted in geography? Because I haven't seen any yet, and that's totally fine. I was just wanting to make sure I'm not missing it.
Okay, have I posted geography yet? Okay, so now that's a good question, Keen, and in the following regard. I am not entirely clear on who's in what level here. So, Keen, you would be one of the most veteran students, right? So I'm wondering if technically you are continuing to use the junior high level, or are you using the high school level technically?
I am in high school level.
Yeah, right. So there's no geography work in the high school level. That's considered to be, that's early stuff. That's for younger students. So there is no geography work at the high school level. And even at the junior high level, I think of it as optional. I think of it as, okay, if you don't know it, then you should, if you don't know it really well, then you should probably do it. But not everybody wants to or cares to, and maybe instead you should be using some kind of game like Statris or something like that. If you want to quiz yourself on geography, maybe you'll find a more original way to do it than to color in some maps. I like the coloring exercise. I think that it's useful for students, but it's especially useful for elementary grade students. By the time you get to junior high, I know full well that people are, students of your age are kind of starting to lose patience with that kind of busy work, and maybe you'd rather learn geography another way. So I don't make it available at the high school, and I only make it available as an option at the junior high level. So thank you for asking, because that allowed me to make that clarification. Okay, anything else? All right, folks. Thanks. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.